From BDWPS.com and BDWPS Podcasts, this is Year of the Bowie, a podcast series that tells the story of David Bowie. I'm your host, Andy. If you haven't listened to the first 7 episodes yet, I would recommend giving them a listen before proceeding with today's show. If you like what you hear on this month's episode, I would love if you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search Year of the Bowie. Now let's get back to the story of David Bowie. In 1980, David Bowie felt jilted by the music industry. With his most recent 2 albums underperforming on the charts, while younger artists that borrowed heavily from him thrived, he decided he needed to step away from music for a while. But Bowie being Bowie, he couldn't stay away from his muse for long, joining the touring cast of the play The Elephant Man just months into his hiatus. He would play the main character, John Merrick, a man who suffered from freakish deformities, a fitting role for a musician who had embraced the sideshow persona for years.
The Elephant Man, that appealed to me because of I have a sort of eclectic thing about freaks and isolationists and alienated people, sort of, and I kind of gather information on people like that.
Theater critics, ready to pounce on an outsider trying to succeed in the theater, would swallow their pride and write glowing reviews of Bowie's disfigured interpretation of Merrick.
You are a famous actress. I am not unknown. You must display yourself for a living, then, like I did.
That is not myself, Mr. Merrick. That is an illusion.
This is myself. This is myself, too.
The appearance of Bowie in the play also helped ticket sales, with the stage door often being swarmed by adoring fans. On December 8, 1980, one of those adoring fans would be a man by the name of Mark David Chapman. 2 days later, Chapman would murder John Lennon.
Late this evening, one of the world's great entertainers and musicians, John Lennon of the Beatles, was shot outside his New York home. John Lennon was shot 3 times at around 11 p.m. Eastern Time. He was rushed to New York's Roosevelt Hospital, but died a few minutes later. Police have a suspect in custody whom they describe only as a local screwball.
The death of his friend, mentor, and stand-in older brother shook Bowie to his core. It also made him reassess being in the public eye with his role in The Elephant Man. Soon after Lennon's death, he left the play, returning to Switzerland away from the public eye. He would keep a low profile for the next 3 years, spending time with his son and continuing to paint. He also continued to quietly work on music, even appearing on several music projects as a contributor. In 1981, Bowie received word that the band Queen were recording their album Hot Space in Switzerland. So he decided to stop by for a jam session. Here's guitarist Brian May and singer Freddie Mercury discussing that magical session.
We're in this studio in Montreux, and David Bowie lives nearby. I think we went out for a meal or some drinks or something, and then landed up back in the studio with the sort of rough intention of doing something.
We were fooling around and just sort of jamming with tracks, and suddenly we said, why don't we just see what we can do on the spur of the moment.
And of course we're used to playing together, and now we have this other guy there who's also inputting.
David's idea to put all these clicks and claps, and then the sort of track grew.
And by that time, David was very impassioned with it, and he had a vision in his head, I think, you know. It's quite a difficult process, and somebody has to back off, and actually I did back off, which is unusual for me.
But
The song would go on to be a number one hit for Queen, even though Bowie's name was uncredited in the liner notes by his request. Next, Bowie would work with Giorgio Moroder on the song Cat People Putting Out Fire, a song that would gain notoriety decades later in Quentin Tarantino's film The Inglourious Basterds. He would also continue dabbling in acting, playing the title character in the BBC production of Ball, taking on the main role of an aging vampire in the 1982 horror film The Hunger, and playing the part of a soldier in the World War II drama Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. When not taking part in these side projects, Bowie spent his days with his son, skiing the Swiss Alps and living a mostly drug-free life. These years of happiness resulted in a newfound view on both life and art.
For me, my son always keeps bringing me back to I keep remembering that there is a tomorrow, when that never really occurred to me before, that there was a tomorrow. And one has to start taking very positive stands on things. It's just as easy to say yes to something and yes to being positive. Mm-hmm. It's much easier, I think, to be nihilistic and to be negative. If you decide and make a decision to write positively, then you are contributing to whatever is left that is positive in life. Mm. So it just all has to be as a greater decision by more people to be more positive about the more positive things in life.
The release of Changes to Bowie, the second greatest hits album, marked the end of both Bowie's contract with RCA and, more importantly, his severance agreement with former manager Tony DeFreeze. Ready to finally earn his keep, Bowie began secretly working on a new music project that would have a lighter, more positive sensibility. To be frank, he was ready to sell out and finally cash in on his years of artistic integrity. With the idea of a mainstream pop record in mind, Bowie brought in chic bandleader Nile Rodgers to produce the album. Here's Rodgers discussing the project.
Bowie had no record deal. Nile had no record deal. I mean, well, string of platinum records, but I couldn't get a record deal. It was like I couldn't get arrested. We were so desperate in a strange way. And also because he told me that he wanted a hit. And I was like, whoa, no, please, David, I got hits. I got a lot of hits. I don't want a hit. I want an art record that makes me just a regular producer.
Nile was able to get past his yearning for an art project, and he flew to Switzerland to help Bowie turn his ideas into mainstream pop hits.
I came over to his house, and he proceeds to play a folk song called Let's Dance. I'm like, if we call this song Let's Dance, I come from dance music. Man, we better make people dance. So I scribbled together an arrangement. We went to Queen's studio and we had these jazz guys come in and read down the charts that I had written to Let's Dance. And David could not believe how I transformed his guitar thing into, you know, dun, 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 psh, dun, 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 dun. I was looking at him and I said to him, I says, David, did I make this too funky? He looked at me and went, Nile, is there such a thing? And I was like, absolutely, brother, I hear you. Let's dance to the song they're playing on the radio. Let's wait
while color lights up your face. Let's wait. give the radio-friendly track some swagger, Bowie brought in a young guitarist he'd seen perform in Switzerland a year earlier, by the name of Stevie Ray Vaughan. His guitar solo would be a definitive element of what would go on to be Bowie's highest-selling single and a bona fide number one hit. The 1983 full-length album, also entitled Let's Dance, would be released by EMI and go on to sell 10.7 million copies worldwide, making it Bowie's highest-selling album ever. The album is front-loaded with hit songs, including the title track, a cover of the Iggy Pop song China Girl, and Modern Love.
I know when to go out.
What's cool about those days is that you could put on a record by David Bowie and it was accepted as a dance record. It was accepted as a song that could make people move.
Many Bowie fans today like to look down upon the safe, listener-friendly effort, although critics at the time lauded the album for its energy and positive message. The album would go platinum in just 8 weeks and help Bowie reach an audience that once just saw him as a weirdo. For his Serious Moon tour later that year, he would also shed the freaky image, appearing on stage with tanned skin, a bleach blonde crew cut, and a wide array of preppy, pastel-colored suits. The world tour would reach an audience of 2.5 million fans. His efforts to normalize himself went so far that he even abandoned his past claims of being bisexual. In a Rolling Stone interview, he said that he'd always been a, quote, closet heterosexual. In a time where fear and paranoia surrounded the gay community in the AIDS epidemic, one can surmise that Bowie made the statement to further himself from the issue. Although in hindsight, it could be argued that he abandoned the LGBT community when they needed his voice the most. Even though he may have been distancing himself from his bisexual past, he did cause controversy that year by speaking out for black artists during an MTV interview.
It occurred to me, having watched MTV over the last few months, that it's a solid enterprise with it, and it's got a lot going for it. I'm just floored by the fact that there's so few black artists featured on it. The only few black artists that one does see are on about 2:30 in the morning or to around 6. Very few are featured predominantly during the day.
He would also show support for his hometown of Brixton, playing a charity show for the struggling community.
The conditions there were never that great, I mean, but it's definitely gotten a lot worse over the years. And it just looks as though it's been left there and forgotten, and that's really sad.
Hot off the heels of his platinum album and sellout tour, Bowie returned to the studio in 1984 to record Tonight, an album that Bowie himself has admitted was done solely to capitalize off his popularity.
It seemed obvious that the way that you make money is give people what they want, and so I started giving people what they wanted.
The 9-track album was comprised mostly of cover songs, and would only feature 2 original David Bowie tracks. One of these songs was Blue Jean, a track that would become a top 10 hit.
Blue Jean.
Coming off the massive hit album Let's Dance, Tonight sold well, but critics weren't having it. Melody Maker called it, quote, rotten, and Rolling Stone magazine referred to it as, quote, an expensive quickie padded with lame covers. Bowie would years later disparage the album, saying, quote, "There's stuff on that album I could really kick myself about." But negative album reviews were nothing compared to the bad news David would receive just months after the release of Tonight. On January 16, 1985, David's half-brother Terry checked himself out of the mental hospital, walked to the train tracks, and placed his neck upon the tracks. Here's guitarist Carlos Alomar discussing the impact of Terry's death on David.
When he died and the whole thing happened, I think that David withdrew, and he didn't really share that with anyone, nor I don't think he wanted to. So it was a very difficult period, knowing that as friends we wanted to reach out, but we didn't want to bring up a subject that might cause him undue distress.
Bowie canceled the planned tour in support of Tonight and isolated himself for several months to help deal with the loss of his hero, his brother, Terry. The only projects he would be involved in during 1985 would both be to raise money for relief of the ongoing Ethiopian famine. The first would be a duet with Mick Jagger, covering the Vandellas Motown classic Dancing in the Streets, with all proceeds going to the Ethiopian cause.
We chose the song because it's summer, and for us, the big summer song of all time was always Dancing in the Streets, and we thought, well, that would be a gas to do that one. And so we both came up with the idea of doing maybe a video that could be shown, and then maybe if it becomes a record after, then we could donate the proceeds to Live Aid as well. It's an invitation across the nation, a chance for folks to meet.
The hastily recorded track and its corresponding video would be one of the more embarrassing moments in Bowie's career, but it's difficult to mock something done in the spirit of charity. The video would debut during Bob Geldof's Live Aid, a charitable concert held at Wembley Stadium that Bowie would also perform at. Bowie introduced the new video on a pre-taped segment, and even he seems to hint at the saccharine nature of the project.
And during the course of 1985, supplies, medical supplies and food will be flown out to Ethiopia. This is being done by you and hopefully with our contribution. It really won't happen unless this record is bought. You may hate the record. It doesn't matter. Just buy a copy and give it to a kid down the street. If you're having money problems yourself, well, then three or four of you get together and buy a copy and then throw it away if you don't want to hear it. If you do want to hear it, buy two copies.
Bowie's performance at the legendary music event would go down as one of the best at a show that featured legends like Led Zeppelin, Bob Dylan, and The Who. His 20-minute set would close with an epic 7-minute performance of Heroes.
I'd like to dedicate this song to my son, to all our children, and to the children of the world. I could be king, and you could be my queen. For nothing could drive them away. We could beat them just for one day. We could be heroes just for one day.
After the show, David remained in London to begin filming on the Jim Henson-directed film Labyrinth. In the film, Bowie played Jareth the Goblin King, a mysterious creature who steals a young girl's baby brother and forces her to traverse a maze in order to save the infant.
Give me the child.
Sarah, beware. I have been generous up until now, but I can be cruel.
Generous? What have you done that's generous?
Everything. Everything that you wanted, I have done. You asked that the child be taken. I took him. You cowered before me. I was frightening. I have reordered time. I have turned the world upside down. And I have done it all for you.
Released in the summer of 1986, Labyrinth would be a flop. However, the film would receive a second life decades later as it gained a cult following. In 1987, a 40-year-old David Bowie would continue down the path of mass appeal by releasing Never Let Me Down, an album of middle-of-the-road, mundane melodies. The album would be commercially successful, but would be poorly received by critics and fans. Never Let Me Down is a somewhat ironic title for an album that is often considered a low point in Bowie's creativity and artistic integrity. Bowie would later discuss the negative impacts the success of Let's Dance would have on the rest of his output in the 1980s.
How do you feel about Let's Dance?
I think it was an extraordinary acceptance that I had there. I'd never had anything quite like that before. Up until that time, I was quite happy being a sort of a major cult figure in a way. You know, it was a nice place to be. It gave me a lot of freedom. I knew that I could depend on an audience that would virtually follow my whims, you know, and I could sort of do what I wanted. But the Let's Dance thing almost became a hindrance and obstacle. In fact, it did become a hindrance and obstacle to me because I suddenly, my poles changed. My focus was on, well, what are the audience's expectations of me now? And I started maybe writing for an audience, which I've never, ever done before. And when I learned that was, for me, a stupid thing to do, I got back into the way of writing for myself again. And I think balance has been, equilibrium has been arrived at now.
Before reaching that equilibrium, Bowie would have one last disappointing venture with his Gluttonous Glass Spider tour. The tour would feature a flashy arena show, complete with costume changes, dancers, production numbers, and special effects. The two-hour show would leave many fans feeling detached from the man they once knew as Ziggy Stardust. Here's music critic David Wilde and guitarist Carlos Alomar discussing the Glass Spider tour.
It was just a sort of David Bowie does Vegas version of himself. It was such a spectacle that it was completely boring.
I was like totally like, what the hell? This is so un-rock and roll.
When the tour was over, Bowie would have the giant spider that stood over the stage burned in a field in New Zealand. David's affair with the mainstream had come to a fiery finish. Bowie rediscovers his rock and roll roots on the next Year of the Bowie.